Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Jules Gill, the biggest thing possibly in history happened this week, especially in entertainment history.
Sorry, I'm interrupting you straight away because I thought were actually just going to flatter my ego then, just say, Jules Gill, the biggest thing to happen to the video game industry. But no, apparently I know what you're talking about.
I'm a little bit upset. Slightly lower down on the rung than Xbox buying Activision, making Call of Duty an Xbox franchise. I actually couldn't believe this, you know, was happening, considering that there were so many rumors doing the rounds across last year. Jules is doing various mind-blown. I was going to say animations. That's how
I'm doing it for from the Tim and Eric show, the classic mind-blown thing. Like,
yeah, that was like because we were doing the main podcast, me, Ben Roy, and Josh on the Wednesday, or maybe no, sorry, it was Tuesday afternoon when it broke. Mm-hmm. And you can watch the live reaction thing over on Twitter because I just thought it'd be funny to put our video side of it up of me just going like that. What? That makes no sense. Like that's that's so crazy. I was shaking after that thing, running down to the downstairs studio because I'm in the office at the minute. Yeah. And just grabbing Josh and being like, "Come in here. We need to do this thing. Oh my god, and,
Josh, I need you now."
And, just like put up the Josh symbol. Like just sign it across the sky and he comes in. But yeah, this thing is easily, you know, it is literally factually the biggest transaction in gaming history, $68.7 billion, Littlefinger territory. Mm-hmm. And it just is, like all the questions that we got this week, because I haven't even mentioned this is the Untitled Banner podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
They know what they're here for.
They know what they're here for, the banter. And so every week we ask people what they'd like us to talk about, and it can be literally anything, but mm-hmm. the vast majority of questions, inquiries, whatever talking points are all centered around this thing, because there's so many variables to it. Like obviously it's a massive umbrella acquisition, but there's mm-hmm. so many IPs in there, and it also points to the idea of Microsoft / Xbox having a monopoly on the gaming industry itself, which is an ongoing thing. There's all these conversations around how it affects American law and whether the deal will actually go through, but at the minute it seems like it will, and it'll close around about June time next year.
Amazing stuff, because I have a lot of thoughts on this,
and yes, I'm hoping please do. I've not talked to you about it, so what do you think?
Well, I actually, I kind of on the one hand think it is amazing that one company can have this much purchasing power to literally buy up most of the highest grossing video game IPs the industry has to offer. Mm. It does, like you say, raise a lot of questions over whether or not it's ethical in terms of like it's turning the market into a monopoly. Mm. But at present, there's nothing to stop them from doing this because there is a sense of you can't say to other people that I'm buying up, that I'm the sole producer of this type of thing and make yourself into a monopoly that way, because Sony and Nintendo definitely exist in the conversation, as well as Sega and other publishers as well. But being able to just do that and say like, hey, you know when you made fun of me, Sony, for not having any exclusives? Yeah. How about I buy everything and then you don't have any exclusive whatsoever?
We'll thread through some different questions. Because that's the thing. I was telling Cleary about this because he was just like, what's going on? Help me understand this. Oh, dear Lord. And then he was like, is this a good thing? And obviously a lot of people who are more casual gamers or just people in general are like, what does this mean? Is it a good thing? Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, I do think it's a good thing right now. I think that I personally have a lot of faith in Phil Spencer. I have a lot of faith in where the Xbox brand is, and I think that they just want to do right by people. If you look at Spencer's history, like he came up from the beginnings of Xbox, like I'm sure he started as a coder, but his head is very much in the right place. He's not a soulless, weird, evil Smeagol businessman like Bobby Kotick is. Spencer, exactly, that's the thing. I guess we'll see how it goes, but right now dude seems like he knows what people want. And all the interviews he's done over the years have only ever reinforced that. So I have faith in him. And I think that when you look at a deal like this, it's like it's only as good as the person at the top. And he is very much at the top of the whole thing. And obviously his early comments since the deal got announced the other day is like, well, I'm going to sit down with all these different teams, see what they want to do, see what they weren't able to do before, and greenlight all this stuff, which should mean Crash Bandicoot, Tony Hawk, Spyro, True Crime, whatever those teams want to do can now exist again. And so I'm up for that. And I also think you can fold in all the Activision stuff, how horribly abusive Activision had become, how creatively devoid they were.
Kind of surprised that the first thing to come out of it, obviously, the first thing that should come out of this deal is that Bobby should be given his marching orders. Yes. Because like, if they want to make sure that Activision's PR worth is increased, then they need to make sure that they are making big changes
around
early.
That. Yeah, it seems like he's going to be going at the end of the deal next year.
I was about to say, they're dancing around it because of the fact it's not a sure thing at the moment, and you don't really want to go in and start slandering the person that is the head of probably the biggest decision-making power in that group. as much as all of the reports around Bobby are, you know, I am not arguing with them, I'm not disagreeing with them in the slightest, you can't just do that straight away before you own the company. Saying to somebody that I'm going to fire you the moment that I get the keys is
that's
probably
what
not the
would, like,
plan.
Love to see. Like, he comes in, kicks Bobby out the back door and goes, right then, what are the Skylanders or whatever we're doing?
Yeah, Skylanders.
Let's do a new Singularity HD remake while we're on.
Oh,
but yeah, that's the thing. There's been more reports came out. Venturebeat put some stuff together. Jeff Grubb put some stuff together in regards to Kotick was apparently looking to sell Activision anyway when he realized that all the allegations, all the abuse stories, all the stuff that was surrounding Activision's PR couldn't be salvaged. Apparently he was looking into buying Kotaku and some other outlets to try and manufacture positive press, and he was also looking to sell Activision.
Is such a slimy move.
Oh dude, it's like full on, like the jig is up, evil kingpin at the top of the tower is trying to like flush all the cocaine down the toilet before jumps out the window. So like, that was very much how the deal came about. Apparently Xbox got wind of it, EA were also in the running to potentially buy it, Xbox got wind of it, Phil Spencer then spent his holiday break putting the whole thing together, and now here we are. So that's the whole thing. Kotick was literally just realized he couldn't salvage Activision and needed to get rid of it ostensibly. So there is all that stuff. But to bring some people's thoughts in, because again, like, I want to know more of what you think, but I think it'll come out as we dive through stuff. So Pinky submitted a question just saying, how nervous are you? Absolute legend. How nervous are you about Microsoft monopolizing the gaming industry? Monopolies are rarely a good thing in any industry. We touched on that before, but how much more power do you think this actually does give them in like a day-to-day basis, I guess?
Well, I feel like if they're going to come in and, like you say, clean house and start changing things and regulate it to the Microsoft way of thinking, then we might actually see the negative side of Monopoly, which is a homogeneity between titles, because everything starts to resemble everything else. It's the Ubisoft formula that we have known and hated for many, many years. But I do think that there are still big competitors in the market, enough so that Microsoft can't be seen as the sole gaming guy there. I mean, Nintendo kind of operates on their own, a galaxy, basically. They kind of exist alongside them, and they have such, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, such a rabid and devoted fan base that I don't think that they'll ever be in any risk of being bought out or conforming to what other stuff is going on in the market.
No.
Sony is, I feel like the biggest blow of this is Sony, because obviously their stock prices drop significantly afterwards, but I do not think that a second that this is them out of the running or being into a significant second place. If anything, this has just leveled the playing field from the amazing amount of first party produced and exclusive titles that they already have. They have built up a overwhelming amount of good PR and press with their sort of for the players movement that they've done. So I do think that going forward, Sony isn't really going to be feeling that much of this. Yes, they will experience a lot
of deals.
There will be a lot of people looking at it thinking, right, okay, so no Bethesda titles on this, no Activision titles on this. That isn't actually true, because as we have just seen with God of War making its way to PC, relationships are only as good as the money that can be made for them. And Microsoft is not a stupid company. It may make some very weird decisions from time to time, aka the HoloLens, but they are only interested in making as much money as possible and getting their products out in front of as many people. Therefore, it will only ever be properly timed exclusives for a lot of these things, and it will only ever be very, very exclusive stuff if it is like first party stuff like Master Chief in Halo. That will probably always remain as an Xbox thing, but I do not think that some of the major Activision stuff, like for example in the acquisition, technically they will be buying the rights to Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice, so that means that, because that was an Activision led title,
God, I guess that depends on the specific contract that FromSoft did with them. But
yeah, true. They may gain the rights to that, for example. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that Sekiro 3 would be an Xbox exclusive? Probably not, because it makes no sense to put it as that, because it has a wider reach if you put it out to a wider market. And let's face it, it's still a niche title within the grand game
publishing Sekiro. That's a really good point. I think in that case, you could obviously probably go and Google that stuff. I would imagine that Hidetaka Miyazaki retains the rights to Sekiro, and that'd be the deal that they did with them. Because I'm pretty sure they own... I think Sony owned Bloodborne because they specifically helped develop it. But I would imagine that Sekiro... But that's a really good idea, though. That's a really good example, though, of like the wider reaching ramifications of do all those publisher deals now have more weight.
Didn't Bethesda recently state that Starfield was coming to other consoles and other platforms?
No, so that's gone. That's the whole thing. That's the interesting part of this, is that when all of this stuff happened with Bethesda last year, there was all these conversations around, does this mean that Bethesda stuff is now Xbox exclusive? Mm-hmm. And Phil Spencer and all the Xbox people danced around that for a while. Then they finally did a video they put out in March last year where they were all sitting around. It was like Todd Howard, Pete Hines, you know, Bethesda people, and Phil Spencer, and they talked about, they like narrowed it down to all Bethesda games will be available on platforms where Game Pass exists. And I think that's the phrasing, because my long-term prediction is that all of this isn't to necessarily squeeze Sony out of the industry or Nintendo or whatever, but it is to put Call of Duty, Diablo, big Overwatch, whatever, on Game Pass with Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Doom, and then go, oh, if you want this, it's going to be on Game Pass and you'll pay us to put Game Pass on PlayStation.
I 100% agree with you, because that is the streaming services like this, or like game library formats, they are the way forward. I don't think that necessarily it's the best thing for the industry in the long run, because you start getting like so many of these subscription models that it actually is such a weight on the consumer. But in terms of being able to say, listen, we have all of these exclusives, we have all of these amazing titles and a backlog of games as well. PlayStation owners, you can have them, but only if Sony ponies up the dole and doesn't deal with us, will we get a percentage of each thing.
That would be my guess, because
They stand to just like end the console war after almost creating it in that sense by just saying, look, it's games for everyone.
Yeah,
Sony's just got to play ball with us.
That would be the way that they would spin it as well. I mean, there was a thing, I think it was late last night, where Phil Spencer said he got off the phone with Mr. Sony, with a specific person up at the high end, so he's talking about the exclusivity.
Woke him up. He had his little like nightcap on. He was like, what's up?
Give him a little prod, worm style, and just said, apparently they organized something where Spencer said that they have no intention to, separate communities. They have no intention to separate things off PlayStation, but he did say variations of this about the Bethesda stuff too, until eventually they said that specific phrasing of available on platforms where Game Pass exists. For me, that's their master plan. That's their Machiavellian 8 years in the making plan. Like, we bought Bethesda, we bought Activision, we might go out there and buy Capcom and Sega, like whatever. They're going to lock it down to Game Pass and then put that on everything. There was already that rumor that Game Pass was going to be on Switch, and I feel like that's the way to get Call of Duty on Switch, which would be a humongous deal. And so that's my overall thoughts on that particular thing. But I'll go on.
There was one thing that does worry me a little bit, and that is that when you look across the Acti Blizzard collaboration of games that they've got, there is a lot of microtransaction riddled games and freemium software. Obviously, in the deal, they'll be getting the Candy Crush Saga stuff, whatever they call it. Again, that is an incredible money spinner, but it is the most deplorable game, if you can call it that, format I've ever seen. Now,
I was funny when they compared all their libraries, and it was like all the Elder Scrolls stuff from Bethesda, Call of Duty, whatever, and then just a Candy Crush Saga, Farm Saga, whatever. Yeah, I was like, they're not on the same level, lads.
But they are making bank at the moment.
Oh, they do, yeah.
And this is the thing. I think that as much as I'd like to see Microsoft go in and clean up this sort of approach to microtransactions, as has been shown with Halo Infinite's rather horrible attempt
horrendous.
To have their store, and then the people weren't paying enough, so they're like, right, we'll just slash the prices, won't fix it, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I worry that Microsoft being handed all of these microtransaction riddled goodies may end up making things worse and not better. But I think they won't address them. They won't see this as being like, right, it's a return to the good old days. No, they're just going to double down on what these franchises are known for right now.
That's the thing. That's what's really interesting, is that like a lot of those microtransactions, a lot of those things are put in there too. You can argue, justify the development cost, justify the turnaround, try and satisfy the shareholders. There's so many shareholders that have got used to a certain bottom line, and like there are so many mouths to feed if you go down that route. that this deal then needs to satiate. And you would assume that Game Pass or whatever access, you know, whatever monetary models Xbox put together still works enough to satiate the Call of Duty shareholders or whatever. And so I think that stuff will get cleaned up because on a sheer brand level, they won't want that stuff associated with Xbox anymore. It's why I think Starfield will be immaculate when it comes out because they can't have a broken Bethesda game front at Xbox anymore.
Now,
like, I think the brand saves a lot of stuff.
You say that, but as we were discussing previously off camera, Halo Infinite, it's showing its flaws very openly.
Going into us, you might say.
Like,
yeah.
I can't believe that my reaction was when we listed it as our like game of the year. I was like, what?
Number two, sorry.
It's a good game. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I enjoy it and I still enjoy playing it.
100 hours in it, but it's still
But there's a lot of it that just isn't up to the standard that I expected from a title and an IP and with all the monetary backing that this thing had. And I worry that it's just like, okay, so you had all of this time, you had all of this money, and you still were forced to meet deadlines, and you were still forced to cut corners here and there. And I'm just like, Microsoft should have been looking at this. It's its flagship IP, and they didn't bungle it, but it wasn't the best.
It's weird, right?
Halo 5. But that isn't much of a challenge in the grand scheme.
The thing that's weirdly fascinating about that is that Phil Spencer and the top tier people were so hands off with that. Obviously, to the point where they weren't checking in every few months and they weren't prodding 343 going, have you fixed it yet? Until they got literal weeks before it was about to be shown. Then we got that horrible demo in 2020 or whatever it was that was half broken. And then all of a sudden it was, oh my God, you guys do need help. Okay, Joseph Staten's coming back.
Yep.
You're getting a 1 year delay. We'll do a free-to-play model for the multiplayer. And then they did that. You assume that they'd learn from that, but the takeaway I get from that is that Phil and the top tier people are incredibly hands off. They're not like Ubisoft executives where they go in and like that Sergei Haskaway guy was doing in Ubisoft and going, make it like the formula over and over again. And so that hands off approach obviously can lead to last minute stuff, but that's a really valid point that I personally think Halo Infinite is an absolute mess. It's a mess I love to play, but every other part of it is abysmal. Like, I really want to do an editorial on how much of a mess that thing is.
I think that the fairest way to describe Halo Infinite, if it sounds like we're bagging on this, is just it's Far Cry Infinite. That's the best way to describe
it. And it's just like, and the multiplayer is stellar, but that's it. The gameplay is stellar. Everything else is horrible. The microtransaction models, the skins, the way the armor works, it's horrible. But yeah, that's the thing. I think a lot of that is 343 and not the overarching company, but they should have got more invested in that. Yeah. And that's a very valid point as to the microtransactions they get away with. But it's interesting because Halo Infinite reviewed very well and because it plays very well, it arguably skirted by a lot of that, FU response that the likes of a Ghost Recon got or something, or Anthem or Avengers or whatever. But yeah, I think it's interesting to think about how the Xbox brand will come across, like, especially because Bethesda are such a weird spot, but now they have to be the face of Xbox.
Do you know what the funniest thing was? Is that you and I were talking a while back about mascots and which mascot defines which console. They've kind of just bought like five or six of them.
Phil Spencer is Xbox's mascot. Yeah,
he's the mascot for sure now. But it's like they bought Crash Bandicoot. They finally have Crash Bandicoot as the Xbox mascot, which makes no sense to my childhood lizard brain. I'm just like,
it is weird. I think because I would assume at this point that they re-greenlight the Tony Hawk's 3 and 4 remakes that we were likely going to get before they took that, I think it's Vicarious Visions, off of those games to make more Call of Duty. I think all that stuff will get spread out again. And I think that's what he's referencing when he says he wants to sit down with the teams and what do you guys want to work on that isn't Call of Duty?
Maybe
Raven get to make a game again, like they had Ultimate Alliance and Singularity. Maybe they get to do something that would be cool. High Moon can do something for a change. Like, there's so many creative people that have just been bolted to Call of Duty for years and years and years. And you would assume that changes something.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm going to fold something else in, a question from The Bright Side of History, who says, big love to the boys. Thanks for the consistently awesome evergreen content. Is Nintendo going to come out of this as a dark horse and blow it all out the water? Now, Nintendo is an interesting thing. Like you said, they're like an island unto themselves.
Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious that they, on the same day this all went down, they put a Banjo-Kazooie trailer out. Because they're just like, oh, yeah, just that's what we do. If you want to play N64 Banjo in HD, that's what we've got for you, which is
And you know what? How can you argue with that? It's like one of the greatest reviewed and most beloved video games ever made. And they've just gone like, it's like, oh yeah, 70 billion. But does it buy you this much nostalgia?
It's like, is it going to stick with you as much as the sound effects and everything from Banjo?
Maybe but, in the distance, as the coins are being like handed over between Microsoft and Activision Blizzard, they're just those...
That's the sound of Phil Spencer when he sleeps. That's his snore noise. But yeah, I think the Nintendo are going to keep doing Nintendo. If you look at the amount of money they've got, there was a whole statistic that did the rounds back when the Wii U was failing, saying that they could afford so many hundreds or thousands of Wii U sized failures before they would even like feel a dent. Like Nintendo goes back, I forget what the actual origin of them is, but I'm sure it's over 100 years. They have a lot of capital.
Yeah, like, man,
they're okay. And thankfully, again, it's as good as the person at the top. Shigeru Miyamoto is a good person. He's a gamer. He's not bothered about monetizing stuff into the ground, even though they do make stupid decisions every now and then, like timed exclusivity for the Mario 64 re-releases. Overall, as a company, they prioritize gameplay, which is the main thing.
Well, look at their library as well. There's a reason why their titles are still so expensive on the secondhand market, is because they are first-party titles, and it just is this weird mythos that's being built up around them. Mm-hmm. So, because of the fact that Nintendo has weirdly become so known for its own exclusives and its a strange approach to gameplay, they exist like in a microcosm that isn't affected by any of this.
They also dominate the handheld market as well.
They could literally look at that 70 billion and say no, because what they offer is something that is unique in the gaming industry. Yeah. The way that you play the games, the handheld market, the motion control stuff, the crazy ideas, the fact that they have kept their sole real true and blue mascot in the form of Mario away from every other console apart from strange like crossover stuff that's like the Olympics Rabbids games stuff. And stuff like that. They've kept it away from everything, and it's been so clever, this careful protection of their own brand image, that it's like it just cultivates a level of monetary worth. It is priceless right now.
Well, they have such a specific feel as well. Like when you get a Nintendo console, there's a specific feel that comes with that. There's a specific feeling to the IP that you suddenly see on the storefront and the way that it's all organized. And like I said, like you said, the way those games play, there is still that Nintendo seal of quality that just isn't in a lot of third-party stuff. You would kind of hope in that regard that Xbox, being behind all this stuff, they ostensibly do, at the bare minimum, a Halo Infinite style approach to whatever it is, get it to a certain level. Halo Infinite is at a level that is playable, and I guess that's the bare minimum. It's just that more stuff should have been done.
Doesn't that blow your mind that you look back at the Mario games, the Mario catalog of games, right? And I challenge you to pick me out a truly bad game out of there, because I know that
I might
a lot
say
of people,
Sunshine, but I know a lot of people like Sunshine.
But that's the thing, that you might say that, but it's not like bad by a standard. It's bad for a Mario game, but that's holding into it a completely different standard. Like in terms of 3D action platformer style stuff, it's still far superior.
Oh, dude, if you like, if it came out now, Yeah, it would still largely keep up with the most of the stuff that's released it like today. Like, yeah. But that's the thing. But like, that's obviously where their focus is going to be. I just love that. It was like hours after the deal broke, they were like, "Banjo, anyone want a bit of banjo? Because that's what we're doing."
Yeah,
and that's entirely their thing. A question from Josh Wild, who says, "Crash Bandicoot is now an Xbox mascot. Yeah. Opinions on a Microsoft version of Smash Brothers? Also, what old Activision title would you like to see back again? Love the podcast. Keep up the good work." Now I have a list of everything that Activision acquired, but what do you think of the Microsoft Smash Brothers?
I'd love the idea of that, but I do feel like I don't know, man, the Smash Brothers concept, like every single time I see it, when it's like, oh, it's the Nickelodeon Toon Bash or Warner Brothers Big Bang Bazinga Bean
Slap-a-roo.
Boys, like I just look at it and just go like, yeah, cool, you've made a bad fighting game effectively, because let's face it, yes. Smash Brothers is, if you are good at Smash Brothers, you will dominate your friends on it, because it's like the learning curve is incredibly steep, and learning all of the, like, learning
to 30 years to understand it.
Focusing on that tiny bit of action when the screen is as big as like your TV, I can't focus on it. I'm bad at the game, and I completely admit to that, but I have so much fun playing it. Every other sort of ripoff or imitation that I've played since, I'm just like, I'm not having as much fun in here. Yes. Oh, well, I can be super Shag and go around slapping people as Shaggy. Like, oh, fantastic. But that is like a 10-minute gimmick. Whereas like, I will gladly pick up the controllers, play as Little Mac, even though he's bad in that. Just do the big old KO punch. Boosh. Boosh.
The thing is, when they did the Nickelodeon one, for me, the absolute crippling blow is they didn't get voice acting. Whereas the upcoming Warner Brothers multiverses, they've paid for all the voice acting. Like Kevin Conroy as Batman again.
Which
and
is
Tara
cool.
Strong as Harley Quinn. So it's like, if they get that right, that's like a level of charm that can make it work. So that's what I would say. If Microsoft are going to do Doom Guy against Master Chief against Soap from Call of Duty, then as long as they have the voices, then I guess I'd be okay with that.
Is it me, or is the Doom Slayer becoming Master Chief more and more and more? It's like, I don't know what it's the same shade of green Swagger. In his armor now, and it's like he's like getting more and more bits of armor as it goes along, and I'm thinking like, are you actually going to do a crossover where it turns out he is Master Chief?
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, I said this after the Bethesda acquisition, but like, how long is it until we see them side by side, until Master Chief and Doom Guy are just side by side for some reason, some stupid crossover Freddy versus Jason style thing? Like, I would love that. But yeah, in terms of stuff that Activision now own, I'll read you some IP that have been very much dormant for a while, and just see what you think. Some of these are only one-offs, but they could do something else. What do you think of Blur? I'm doing a new Blur.
Is that the driving game where you get to like
very stunty and arcade?
Yeah, that was cool actually. I enjoyed that. Yeah,
some of these I would just take an HD re-release. I think Blur could absolutely do one. DJ Hero.
I actually really liked DJ Hero.
Really?
I actually, I got that and DJ Hero too. I don't think it needs a comeback though. I think we're done with the plastic peripheral stuff.
Like, funnily enough,
we did the Rock Band remaster or the Guitar Hero Resurrection thing that came out, and it was a thing.
Was them going like, oh, it's a legacy IP. That was in 2015. And then it was just, they monetized the living hell out of it and killed it immediately. Yeah. It was just like, that's not the right approach.
And the live crowd format thing where you just got to see real people. I was like, I don't want to see real people. Give me the cartoony over the top thing.
I think if they did a free-to-play version of it, where I just don't know how you would necessarily, because you need to buy the instrument, but some sort of monetization model that lines up with Game Pass, where you're getting new, it's like, oh, and also this month it's a content pack for this because this album's out or whatever.
Yeah.
They could maybe do something like that. Not DJ Hero. They also own a gun. Remember Gun?
I flipping well loved Gun. I thought that was brilliant. Like, honestly, because I came off the back of playing Red Dead Revolver on the PlayStation 2, and then I got Gun when I got the Xbox 360, and I was it's not as silly and over the top, but there's some pretty cool features in it. There's a bit where like you're on this wagon and you're going through town. It's like just a regular shooter shooting gallery style thing. But I was like, this is so silly and
see,
fun. I love it.
I loved Revolver, and then when I played Gun, one of my friends had Gun, and I just sort of went on it, and I was like, this is a bad Red Dead Revolver. So I never like played it properly, but I would go back to it now. And they also acquired King's Quest, which I feel had a nice little run across the last few years.
I think King's Quest. Wait, King's Quest as in the point and click game?
Yes, the old Sierra.
I remember that. Yeah, because I remember buddy Cedric the Owl trying to give you him every single time. He would be like, oh, don't go over there, Prince. And it's just like, don't tell me what to do. Oh, I've died. Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, yeah, they were like the newest ones were also notoriously hard. And they also acquired Prototype, which I loved Prototype quite a lot. The first one, not two, just the first one. Just give me big, dumb, stupid, attitude, new metal man running around.
Why didn't you like the second one?
Because it was just a clone. It was exactly the same. It was one of those games that was just the same game again, but with a different protagonist. And I like the whole thing in the first one where you were trying to figure out what was going on. Why are you all crazy and full of mutant powers? And it was like, you had to eat the right people to get the right memories to figure out where you came. I was like, that's a really cool idea for an open world thing.
I think I was just so done on the likes of Infamous around that time. So I was just like, yeah, it's just the same.
Oh, see, that's the thing. When Prototype and Infamous launched together, I was a Prototype guy, because of course I was. But they also acquired Singularity, like I mentioned before. Really cool first-person shooter that deserves a re-release. Soldier of Fortune, which hasn't been a thing in a long time.
I wouldn't be touching Soldier of Fortune with a long, smelly, poo-encrusted barge pole, because I think that
that was the gory game.
Yeah, it was gory for the sake of gory, and I think nowadays it's probably not cool. I don't know. I don't know. Somebody can correct me if I'm completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was like very gung-ho, like, go America, let's shoot everyone who was slightly different from us. And I was like, it's probably not going to fly in 2022.
I rented that for the gore, because when I was younger, I was at Mortal Kombat and gore and limbs, and I'll get this.
Yeah.
And then I got Soldier of Fortune and just blew limbs off for a bit. And young me was like, this is brilliant, but I didn't know what was going on or why I was shooting people, but I loved removing the limbs.
I actually covered it in a glitch video a while back, which was if you kill, and I can't believe I'm saying this, if you kill the like women in this certain level, their death screams like go over and over and over again, like loop over and over, and they never stop. So it's like punishes you for killing women by that.
As you should be haunted by the screams of the people that didn't deserve to die. The Tony Hawks, they got Time Shift, they got Tenchu, I think Tenchu deserves something. Like, I mean, I would do a Wrath of Heaven HD re-release, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other ones that's worth throwing in here is True Crime. Because there was the Streets of LA game, Streets of New York as well, which maybe those games haven't aged very well. They were fun at the time, the open world crime boom of the day.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. All I remember from True Crime 1 is the bit where you get to the level.
The mystical demon fight, because that comes out of nowhere.
That is absolutely bizarre, isn't it? Because I just remember looking at the objective, and the objective is destroy Wu's demons, and you're just kind of like, I'm sorry, what?
Like, just randomly like
Christopher Walken, like chewing you out as a cop, and then you've got that, and then he turns into a dragon, and I'm like, what is going on here?
It's the only like supernatural demon bit in the whole game. The rest of it's just this like Rush Hour style, like Eastern infused action film, but whatever. True Crime is a bit all over the place, and then Streets of New York barely sold anyway. But overall, Jacob writes with the next question, who says, what can PlayStation do to stay in demand? Also, can we have a sneak peek at the UBP mugs? Well, funnily enough, we just submitted the designs for them this morning, so I think we're going to be waiting until about February, it seems. We're kind of just flying by the seat of our UBPs at the minute, because
I think I think the plan is that the designs have been approved by the bosses, so we're sending them to the manufacturer, and we need to get a test sample to make sure that they actually look good, because there's always a case where, like, it's happened to me before with the stuff I do for Live and Let's Dice. It's like you put a logo on there, you think it looks good, it gets there, and it's like sat in the wrong place. And you're like,
yeah, I was gonna say,
right, I'm glad I didn't put this out. It's like a massive thing, sort of thing.
Because massive shout out to Rich Hudson for giving us because he made our original thumbnail back in day, and so he sent us the graphics. So I faffed about with that. I've had a big old faff, and I've made some a wraparound graphic that we're just gonna hope fits. And
it's
so
going to be lovely. It looks so nice together as well.
The actual artwork is lush. What can PlayStation do to stay in demand? Now, this we had another question. Actually, I'll throw this in by Dave Goff as well, who says, is there a strong enough back catalogue of games for PlayStation's upcoming Game Pass codename Spartacus to compete? Will Sony have to maybe scrap their exclusive business model? This is interesting. What do you think? Like, what the hell does Sony do to combat this? And if they had a Game Pass that was every legacy of PlayStation, would that be enough?
Well, all I'm saying is that when I think of Sony, I think of my childhood, because the fact that it was always the PlayStation 1, it was the PlayStation 2, and then I jumped ship around then to go to the Xbox 360, and I then got a PS3. But like, those classic games are so embedded in what I think of when it comes to the video game industry, that if they were able to do a Game Pass that traded on all of those, they would have my subscription for life.
Same.
Like, I know that there are ways to just emulate these games for free, and I know that you can go out and buy the copies of it, but to have every single hard-hitting, stone-cold classic from the PlayStation 1 and 2 era
right
on my latest thing, like, I would pay for that. Especially if it was up-res models or supported in a way that was like, gave you region differences between like the PAL version and the American version as well.
That's the thing, like the way that Nintendo have done the N64 app, well, like, because of those games' file sizes, you can just store like a nice little legacy, a nice little chunk archive of N64 classics and just jump between them. Like, that's really cool, jumping between Ocarina to Banjo and back again or whatever. They could absolutely do that, have a little PlayStation 1 executable or a PS2 executable on the PS5 dashboard. And I think as well, I think if they get out there and do a really well-edited trailer, consider they'd have to get a lot of third-party approval for it these days, but you know, you have Tekken 3 on there, maybe Soul Calibur is on there, or whatever. Whatever it is, you'd have a lot of smash cuts of like PlayStation history, and you double down on the fact that like you said, they gave us our childhoods. Like, we love gaming, like a large part because of them. Depending on which console you had, there's a lot of love to cash in on. I think that there's a way that becomes the Disney Plus approach, where they don't then supplant it with enough worthwhile new stuff that lives up to the old stuff, even though they're trying Mandalorian, Boba Fett, whatever.
But
you need to match it. Yeah,
I would say that their approach should be every single like PlayStation 1 classic first, and then they drip feed PS2 and PS3 smash hits, as it were, to like do that, because that would keep the subscription model feeling fresh and interesting.
Oh, I think they maybe rotate through it. Like, you just sort of go, oh, this month, it's such and such. Because then you would do the tie-in with the third party. You'd do the marketing boosts.
Yeah.
You know, you would do, oh, this month Tekken returns, and it's all three Tekkens or whatever.
Oh, that'd be so good.
I would love that. And you can then you do your trailers, you do your marketing blitz, like whatever. I would do that stuff. But yeah, there's, like you said, there's so much to mine from those consoles. Like, do an SSX month.
That'd be amazing.
Get EA to revive the big brand and do Freakstyle and SSX and everything like that.
I mean, no one's to say that Sony couldn't just respond in kind and try and buy EA. If they bought them, then they would basically, I mean, that would be a very expensive deal as well, but it would be able to
That's the thing that's doing the rounds. The thing that's doing the rounds is that they don't have enough money to do this level of acquisition. But then I saw other people saying, oh, it depends on how you like analyze what money they have freed up, because PlayStation's like a wing of Sony and how much Sony's involved in this and whatever. Xbox, obviously a wing of Microsoft too. But yes, next question from Sustainable A. Aaron, who says, hope you guys are staying warm. Thank you. It is very cold, to be honest, at the minute.
It is freezing.
With the big acquisition, do you think we could get some super funky crossover games, something like Halo/Diablo, or just more StarCraft? Dare to dream. Like I said, I think it'll be Halo crossed over with Doom.
I totally agree. I can fully see that the new Doom mode, it's the new Doom game coming out with a multiplayer that has the voiceover guy from Halo coming over to do a Slayer Fest event. So it was like, I mean, Doom Eternal's still very much alive and kicking on the multiplayer scene. Like, it's not as big as, say, some other things, but they could even add like in a Fiesta mode where it was like weapons and characters from the Halo universe dropping in to say hi.
Sorry, I'm having a brain fart what's the opposite of a brain fart? Because brain fart means you forgot stuff. I'm having a brain ingest.
A mind suck.
Yes, I'm having a mind suck. Because I'm just thinking, all the problems Halo Infinite has, all their weird, like the Tenrai, the timed events, do it Fall Guys style and have a Doom event. And you own all that stuff. You've just bought, like, have a Crash Bandicoot event or whatever. Like, let me put, like, armor pieces that come from Doom or something like that. They could absolutely do all that stuff.
They could do it so that they do, because you know the Fiesta thing starts off with a random weapon assortment. You could have it so that you've got Wumpa boxes around. You've got to break the crates in order to get a different thing, and it randomizes which one you get.
That would be genuinely incredible. I know that would take months to put together, but that would be a hell of an event. That would like almost single-handedly revive Halo Infinite.
What they could do is they could take the Halo campaign map that they've got, which is very, very expansive. Mm-hmm. They could add in a kind of Fortnite-esque thing where, like, once you download this piece of little extra content, randomly, the Doomslayer might arrive on your world as a high-value target, and you've got to hunt him down, which could be amazing.
Like I said, I think the amount of possibilities they have, that's the thing. I want them to, like, overall, I want them to have fun with it. Like, they've just bought a ludicrous amount of IP. There's so many possibilities for this stuff, and they simply don't need to worry about getting permission anymore. So you would just think they go to
whatever they want.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is a separate thing, but it's like, go to Obsidian, go to Bethesda, sit them down in a room, both those companies, all of them, make them all shake hands again.
And then crazy.
You know, get that stuff to work again. It's just like, it is an insane thing. I obviously get the massive downsides. There is that risk of a monopoly. There is the risk of Spencer leaves or whoever. We'll wait and see how it all goes. But when you look at the state of the IP as it was, the stuff that they've just acquired, and the state of the studios as they were in, at the minute, maybe it's just the optimist in me, but I am optimistic. I think that we'll get good stuff out of this.
Yeah.
Because they need you to buy Xboxes. They need you to buy Game Pass. So for the last couple of questions, let's do one from McAllister NYC, who says, Xbox may have Activision, but doesn't PlayStation have the better controller? I prefer it because of the symmetry of the stick placement. Do you guys prefer the sticks like that or more askew like Xbox and Nintendo? Cheers, lads, and happy 2022. Now, this is going to be a debate to end all debates, but where do you come down on this?
I unfortunately come down on the side of the Xbox. I think that it is a phenomenally designed controller. It is ergonomic. It feels lush. I've got, at the moment, I'm rocking the Turtle Beach Elite thing that they came out, which is like based on the
that's Xbox got the controller. The separate sticks. They're not in
the
line.
Lovely flappy paddles. They're not in line. It's like, it is one of the best controllers that I've actually used in a long time. I'm not just saying that to shill them. I just genuinely think it's really good.
Yeah. See, I would, I like both. I can say I like both equally. I do play the Xbox about as much as PlayStation. I'm going to go DualSense because I like a nice chunky controller. The bigger, the better.
The haptic feedback thing as well is obviously very good.
Haptics are great. And like, yeah, I like a nice chunky controller. Give me the Duke. I bought a Duke for my Xbox and then it didn't work. It didn't work. Although, if you look at the new Dukes, this is such a specific reference, but when the original Xbox launched, there was a massive dinner plate size controller called the Duke, and they did a re-release of it. It was just for anybody else who's you know, not 20 or whatever years we are. Mm-hmm. And that thing, if you buy the new one, it has an animation in the middle of it that plays the Xbox boot up animation, like in the middle of the controller. Cool. So cool. But then when I finally got it, it didn't want to work. So I was like, we'll have to send it back. But at someday, I'll get another one. But yeah, I'll go PlayStation, you go Xbox. No doubt people will sign off. Whichever one they prefer. And last thing, which isn't a question, but more of a statement, kind of a question from Aaron Richards, who says, can we just get a massive RIP to Every Time I Die? Just ending on a metal point.
I know, man.
Metalcore will never be the same again.
Well, apparently they had a huge bust up with Jeff Buckley, the lead singer, and I'm very upset about it because, like, whatever is going on behind the scenes, hopefully they can work it out. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. But I honestly, Gutter Phenomenon is one of my favorite albums ever. Mm-hmm. I put it on regularly because of how abrasive and lo-fi it is. I think that it's pure aggression wrapped up in a few very sparse, catchy jingle bits. And I'm like, oh, give me that hatred. Love it.
I didn't realize how long they'd been going. Like, they started in 1998. Yeah. And then, like you said, right now there's a whole back and forth going on where, like, the Keith Buckley, the singer, is arguing with the bassist and whatever. Just enjoy the music. Just go back. And if you're a metalcore fan, you like aggressive music, whatever, go enjoy some Every Time I Die. One of the greatest bands to ever do it.
But a little piece of advice for you, my friends, and I know that it's one that some of you might disagree with me. If in doubt, if you're ever looking at something like this, never get a band tattoo. Just never get a band tattoo. Like, I'm just being serious. I'm trying to protect you from future disappointments. What if your favorite band breaks up and you've got that on and you get sad every time you look at it? What if something worse happens and it turns out that they're baddies? You know,
there is that.
I
mean, as someone who has, how many have I got? 3 band tattoos. I just think of it as like it immortalizes the love I had in the moment. So as long as they don't do anything horrific, I'm glad I've got a Lost Prophets tattoo. But Metallica one, my Alter Bridge one, and my Slash one, they're all fine so far. So I'm just like, that's not too bad. But I think, yeah, but in regards to Every Time I Die, go check out their album. They had one of their best albums so far last year, I think, maybe the year before. But one of their newest ones was held up quite a lot.
It was a very welcome return for them because I put it on and I just, you know what? I thought to myself, it's been a long time. Maybe they're a bit long in the tooth. Maybe they don't have the energy. And I was like, oh, boys, calm down.
Which I guess works as like a perfect bookend to their entire career. But yeah, overall, it's been a week filled with Xbox Activision stuff and it won't be slowing down anytime soon. There's so many variables to this thing. So we'll see what happens across between now and next week. And maybe we'll just do a follow-up. We'll just see what happens. But thanks massively to everybody who sent in their questions and talker points and stuff, because this has been the Untitled Bander podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me. Might I say, Scott?
Yes.
The UBP, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.